If you like greens, you'd better order a salad, because this is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Hello everyone, welcome to the weekly dose of common sense. I'm Corey Bernardi, and thank you for tuning in to the podcast where you'll get more common sense in 30 minutes than through a year of the ABC. And didn't I learn that firsthand? Because a couple of nights ago, I went back to Q&A after 3 years in the wilderness. And as soon as I got there, I've gone, why have I done this? It reminded me of the time you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken and you gorge yourself and you go, oh my goodness, I feel terrible. Why do I do this? And you don't go back for five more years. I'm not saying I'm not going back to Q&A, but my goodness, it's just so polarized and biased, and there's no opportunity to talk about in depth about the principles behind things. Anyway, you can get my take on it in my weekly dose of common sense blog at coreybernardi.com, and we cover it off in a bit of the your say. But in this episode of the weekly dose of common sense, I'm going to talk about a great Australian poet, and it'll be a poem that many of you will be familiar with, but I'm sure most of you wouldn't have heard in its entirety before. We're going to go and revisit the Conservative Revolution, because there's part of it that I'm going to be discussing at the National Press Club in a couple of weeks, and there is a bumper your say. It takes up most of this episode, but I hope you'll find it interesting. So, without further ado, let's get into it.
You're not alone. Don't let common sense get trapped in the silent majority. Join the conservative revolution at conservatives.org.au.
Thanks for tuning in. This is your weekly dose of common sense. I'm Corey Bernardi, and today I want to remind you about the birth of one of our best loved and most famous bush poets, Dorothea McKellar, who was born in 1885 on the very first day of the financial year, the 1st of July. And she wrote this fantastic poem, My Country. The second verse will be known to many of you, but there are many verses. It doesn't take long. It'll take a couple of minutes. I won't do it justice, but I'm going to give it a go. My Country by Dorothea McKellar. The love of field and coppice, of green and shaded lanes, of ordered woods and gardens is running in your veins. Strong love of grey-blue distance, brown streams and soft dim skies. I know, but cannot share it. My love is otherwise. I love a sunburnt country, a land of sweeping plains, of rugged mountain ranges, of droughts and flooding rains. I love her far horizons. I love her jewel sea, her beauty and her terror, the wide brown land for me. A stark white ring-barked forest, all tragic to the moon, the sapphire misted mountains, the hot gold hush of noon, green tangle of the brushes where lithe lianas coil, and orchids deck the treetops, and ferns the warm dark soil. Core of my heart, my country, her pitiless blue sky, when sick at heart around us, we see the cattle die, and then the grey clouds gather, and we can bless again the drumming of an army, the steady soaking rain. Core of my heart, my country, land of the rainbow gold, for flood and fire and famine, she pays us back threefold. Over the thirsty paddocks, watch, after many days, the filmy veil of greenness that thickens as we gaze. An opal-hearted country, a willful, lavish land, all you who have not loved her, you will not understand. Though earth holds many splendors, wherever I may die, I know to what brown country my homing thoughts will fly. That's My Country by Dorothea McKellar. Let's celebrate it. Let's commemorate a great Australian who's made a lasting impact on our creative and artistic culture and captured the beauty, the essential beauty of this great land.
Are you buried in red tape and struggling to get ahead? You need the Conservative Revolution at conservatives.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Corey Bernardi. This is your weekly dose of common sense. And you know, every few podcasts, I like to revisit one of my books, The Conservative Revolution, because conservatives are now the revolutionaries. We are trying to put things back the way they were, to change the status quo, because the world has just gone so crazy that we're fighting the establishment now. It's hard to believe, but that's where we're at. And this book was written in 2013, and it covers a whole range of areas, faith, flag, family, freedom, free enterprise. But it also touches upon the Australian Constitution. And I want to read you a page or two from it. A large part of Australia's national strength and stability can be directly linked to our founding document, the Constitution. This primary document affirmed our status as a nation, built upon the rock of a uniquely British variant of European Christian civilization, in particular, one that is established under God. The practical effect is that our constitutional order is not just subject to the whim of the people, but has as its central organizing principle a liberty that revolves around an idea which transcends individual desire or personal whim. We derive our concept of justice, which is impersonal and objective, from this relationship between the citizen and the law. To help guarantee this liberty and avoid tyranny, executive power is apportioned under the Constitution across various levels of government and under the stability of the Crown. What many people seem to forget today, even many conservatives themselves, is that the value of the Crown resides in the fact that it is a non-political institution, which, but for the defamatory campaign to unjustly discredit, can embody the spirit of the nation and therefore arguably represent the people on a more profound level than a member of Parliament. It is significant that the Federation of the Six Australian Colonies to form the Commonwealth of Australia in 1901 was a result of the direct vote of the people. The first time in history a nation has been formed in this manner. In short, our Constitution was drawn up by Australians, for Australians, and was endorsed by Australians through a series of referenda. And this Australian Constitution adopted aspects of the four existing federations, the United States, Switzerland, Canada, and Germany, to create what many would consider to be the finest constitution in the world. Our nation has been blessed by being spared the civil turmoils of other countries in the new democratic world. Our only major constitutional crisis in 1975 was resolved through established parliamentary and electoral processes, without the bloodshed and chaos that may have accompanied similar troubles in neighbouring states. In combining aspects of other federalist systems of government, the founding fathers were able to build on the wisdom of our ancestors. It is a point of pride that the very genesis of our nation was the product of quintessentially conservative minds who looked to established traditions and drew from what worked among other peoples whose countries shared a similar cultural and religious foundation. By adopting that which had proved itself to be of enduring significance in the affairs of nationhood, including the separation of powers, an executive that remains as part of the legislature, population-based electorates, equal state representation in the Senate, and a formal process through which the Constitution could be changed, their conservative approach has been vindicated over many decades. Now, why do I read that to you today? It's because I've just had confirmed that I'm going to be talking about the Constitution, the constitutional monarchy, and about whether Australia should become a republic or not at the National Press Club in a couple of weeks' time. Still to be confirmed, but I think my opponent's going to be Peter Fitzsimons. Many of you would be aware of him. If you want a book and you'd like to attend, be great to see you there. It's at the National Press Club, I think around the 18th of July, but I'll confirm that and you'll catch it on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere else. But stay tuned to the Conservatives website, the National Press Club website, and let's see if we can kickstart the Conservative Revolution.
Are the PC nut jobs getting to you? Don't panic. This is your weekly dose of common sense.
Well, it's now time for your say, and I got to kick off with this one. Jay contacted me last week, and he said, under normal circumstances, I can't stand the show Q&A. I'm with you, Jay, let alone the ABC. Their leftist bias is laughable. However, when I found out you'll be appearing on Monday's show, I was intrigued and signed up for the studio audience just so I can witness you serving up a bit of balance to that panel. I'm sure you'll be in the minority, but just to know you'll have at least one young AC member supporting you there. Good on you, Jay. And, might I say, just after the show, hi, Corey. So proud to be an AC tonight. You stepped into the lion's den and did us all extremely proud, mate. The highlight of my night was sitting in that audience and seeing the look of sheer horror on the faces of those leftist elites sitting around me when you received a round of applause. Absolutely priceless. Hey, Jay, thank you for being there. You weren't the only Conservative Party member there, actually. I met a few in the street as I was walking there. It was fantastic. And people were singing out to me in cars and they were saying nice things as well. But you do walk into the lion's den, there's no doubt about it, because the audience is left-leaning, the panel, notwithstanding they have a liberal on it, is left-leaning. There was a guy sitting next to me who I'd sued for defamation and won. And, you know, he was telling me all these terrible things, including that same-sex couples are capable of reproducing. So he must have failed biology as he was becoming a newspaper editor. Anyway, Jay, thanks for being there. Cheers, mate. Peter says, you and I had a brief fiery exchange about Malcolm Turnbull some time ago. Oh, was I wrong? Hey, Peter, I'm liking this already. I have my fingers crossed you run a candidate in Higgins, as the alternative is Pauline Hanson. I can't vote Liberal, they're soft left. I can't vote Labor, hard left. And I wish Peter Dutton would deport the Nutter Greens. I'm sure you won't remember me, but I'm sorry. I want you to accept my profuse apologies. If I can vote for you a member of your party, I will. Thank you, Peter. We don't get many of those, but I did say that there was a huge cost changing from Tony Abbott to Malcolm Turnbull. It's an opportunity cost. It's not about the personalities. It's not even about the policies. It's about what the culture is. And I don't know how they can rectify the damage. But anyway, thank you, Peter. Simon, it makes me sad that people like you end up representing a larger group of people. I don't think you're an unreasonable person. Well, thank you, Simon. And I have little doubt that you mean well. Well, thank you again. However, I think you forget that not everyone has the benefit of being a white middle-class male. Well, Simon, let me tell you, I'm now identifying as a black lower socioeconomic woman, if that makes you feel better. Okay, I'm over that now. I'm now a white middle-class male. You, just like me, are a privileged person that can see pretty much in any semi-functional system. Not everyone can, including women, indigenous migrants, or any other minority group. Simon, get out of it, mate. You are pathetic. I'm sorry. You're saying women can't succeed in a semi-functional system? You're a sexist. Indigenous can't? You're a racist. Migrants can't? The proof is all around us. My father's a migrant and was successful. You have living in a parallel universe. Anyway, he keeps going. We live in a very different world and social construct than the one I think you would like us to have is back in. Oh, whatever. Okay. Just stop having the attitude that everyone should be contributing to society the same way you do. This is the only way to be valuable. All the best with a heavy load of representing the people. I don't envy you, but I don't agree with you and think your view of the world is a dangerous one. You know what's dangerous, Simon? Someone who says that women, indigenous migrants, and any other minority group can't succeed. You are almost everything that's wrong with the attitude in this country. Monica says, I've just seen the discussion on Q&A tonight on funding contraception to drug addict. I'm astounded at your attitude and disappointed. I've been following you as hopefully a light in Australia's dismal current political scene. I work in a methadone clinic. I'm a committed Christian. I absolutely agree with the young man. Listen to what he's saying. Okay, for those of you who didn't watch Q&A, and I can understand that, there was a chap there who basically said he wished he'd never been born because his mother was a drug addict. He was put into foster care and mistreated, horribly abused. And he says the government should be paying drug addicts $5,000 to get contraception, long-term contraception. I have a philosophical objection to that. I don't think the government should be paying anybody to take up contraception. If they do, why just limit it to drug addicts? Why not to the mentally ill? Why not to those who have gambling addictions or who have alcohol problems or who have anger management issues? Why not just have a bunch of sterilization police go around and say, you're not worthy of having children? There's a principle attached here. Sure, we know there are deadbeat parents all over the place. They don't have to be on drugs to be like that. But it's not the answer for the government to be giving people who can't even manage their own lives $5,000. Imagine that. Give them $5,000, they'll go and spend it on drugs. I think you have to be on drugs to think, you know, that's going to work. They changed it on Q&A, by the way. That was the policy when it started, and when I voiced my objections, they said, no, it should be voluntary, and it should be provided by private organisations. That's a different story. But you can't change the argument halfway through simply because you're losing. Anyway, thank you for the email, Monica. You and I disagree, but we do agree. We both think Donald Trump's all right, so thanks for the email. Martin writes, Corey, I've been Labor for life at 72 years old. I'm disgusted with Turnbull. Nothing but cock-up since he was Mr. NBN. I cannot support Labor either. This is what I aspire for. Get out of the Paris Agreement. Hear, hear, Martin. Stop money going to Palestine. Hear, hear. Inquiry into all funds going abroad. Hear, hear. Build a coal or nuclear power plant somehow. Hear, hear. Just get the private sector to do it. Stop money going to banks. It is the same as releasing a murderer after he pays $5 to government. A joke. Of course, my list is longer, so much to fix. I don't know about stopping money going to banks. Banks make money because they take our money. Anyway, we're on 90% of it there, Martin. Good work. And he finishes, good luck. I'm likely to be with you to the end of my trail. Thank you, Martin. I hope that's the truth. Julie, hello. I'd like to know Corey's life and family background. Oh, wow, that's a big one. His view as to where he sees the party heading, how to achieve his plan, and so forth. Well, Julie, I can't cover it all now, but, you know, I'm the child of an Italian migrant who came here when he was 16. He married an Australian woman who has some indigenous heritage, which surprised a lot of people. He worked, as he learnt English, in a pasta factory, and then later on at David Jones, he started his own business and made an amazing success. They raised three children together. They're still going strong, which is magnificent. And they've got, I've got a count now, 8 grandchildren. So it's been an unbelievable life. And I've been very privileged. When I say privileged, my parents worked very, very hard to give me a decent education, to give me decent values. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but looking back, I recognise just how important this is. And you know what's most important to me? That the fact was I always knew I had the love of my mother and my father, and they had my back even when I did the most terrible things in the context of childhood. I always knew they loved me. So tell your kids you love them. All right, Dom. G'day, Corey. I'm a 16-year-old high school student living in South Australia. I've always enjoyed reading your blog and listening to your podcast. You're now on it, Dom. I've learned a lot from both. Like many people, I'm constantly frustrated with left-leaning bias in most of the media. When I heard of Australian Conservatives, I was thrilled to know there was a good conservative alternative and it wasn't a personality cult. Good on you, Dom. Though I can't vote yet, during the SA election, I told my parents about the Conservative Party and tried to get my mates to do the same. I wish more people my age would take a serious interest in politics as it impacts everyone. I was reading your policies on the website and noticed you support term limits for politicians. What does this entail? Why you support it? I've always disagreed with term limits like for presidents in America. I think if you want someone to lead their country for more than 8-year limit, why shouldn't they? Well, there's a lot more in that email as well. But Dom, essentially, I think the system is busted because I think people set their sights on a political career. It shouldn't be a career. You shouldn't go in there thinking, I'm going to hang around here for the next 30 years until I can, you know, get pensioned off or prepare myself for a job in the private sector. And I think that people tread water. They're far too cautious and they want to climb the greasy pole rather than get stuff done. Now, how can you do that? I think we can reform the Senate. Most notably, I think that the senators should sit in party blocks. I think there should be a House of Review. There shouldn't be ministers coming from the Senate. I think the committee system needs to be strengthened and would be strengthened as a result of that. And it should be there to improve legislation and work out the detail to fix the stuff that the House of Reps often don't have time for. But if you have term limits, if you know you're only allowed to do 6 or 12 years or whatever it might be, you're going to go in there and you're going to try and make your mark as soon as you possibly can because you're not going to hang around waiting for baubles. You're not going to be put off and say, I'll just get through the next election and we'll make you parliamentary secretary for basket weaving or whatever. It's imperfect. I know people object to term limits and things, but I think they've got to get rid of the professional politician or the career politician. We should take our job seriously, but it should be a snapshot in our lives and then you should get out and get back on to the productive things that are so important in building wealth and prosperity in our country. Dwayne, for weeks I've been listening to the weekly podcast. You talk about preferences. Unfortunately, you say the voter needs to determine that. While this isn't correct, it is missing the point of those asking the question. All the people are asking is, if we were to vote for AC, what are the best preference choices we could make? What flows would be best for supporting the AC preferences flow should the AC candidate not win? Well, Dwayne, you had a lot more in there, mate, but in essence, you can choose who you want and how you want to direct your preferences yourself. And I can't tell you how you should be putting your preferences because I don't even know who the candidates are. What if you're running in a seat, like in Batman, for example, and I say, yeah, always preference the Liberal Party. What if they don't run there? I've got to wait and see who the candidates are. And, you know, if it's not going to affect the outcome of government, we should be choosing the people who have the most principles or values that they're going to uphold in the positions that they have. We don't want to be a shill for the Liberals or a shill for Labor or anyone else. And so I can't give you a blanket coverage about how you should direct preferences. If we make that decision, we'll make that decision when we've got all the information, who the candidates are, how they're going to conduct their business, who they're supporting, and will they support us? They're the sorts of questions that need to go, mate. So, and might I say this, in the Senate, you can just vote one if that's what you want to do. Now, you're not allowed to publicly advertise that or promote that in any formal sense as a party, but just putting one in the Senate box next to Australian Conservatives is a valid vote. Otherwise, you can put 1 to 6 and you can choose whom you'd like. How do I know who's going to be the second best choice? Could be One Nation, could be the Liberal Democrats, could be another conservative type party, could be the Liberal Party. Who knows who's going to be registered? So that's why I can't tell you, Dwayne, but thanks for your email. Henry and Wendy, we have a son aged 36 with a disability. He's been in care for 3 years and been on the NDIS from the beginning as we live in, and I won't say it, but anyway, good on you, Henry and Wendy. I sent a question to Q&A saying, I do not have faith with the NDIS. We're both in our 70s. We're not feeling comfortable that the NDIS will last. We have to be our son's advocate and know the right questions to ask as our son cannot speak. This is difficult speaking for someone else, but we'll continue to be his advocate while we're able to. Thank you for all you do. Well, Henry and Wendy, thank you for all you do because this must be an extraordinary difficult circumstance. And I don't think people can hope to understand what you've gone through for the last 36 years and what you're going to continue to go through and your concerns and your love for your son after you've gone. What I can tell you is this about the NDIS. I think it is a bottomless pit of, and it's going to be a huge constraint on the budget, but both parties are committed to it. And those who are truly deeply in need of care and funding, I'm sure will continue to get it. It is the more marginal cases where I think we're going to run into trouble because there's a lot of people that are pushing to get into the system, even though they don't really need it. And because of the funding constraints, there are other people who are much more dire circumstances who perhaps are not getting all that they need or should. And it's a diabolical situation, but unfortunately, choices need to be made. Henry and Wendy, my heart goes out to you and your son. If you send me an email with your address, I'm going to send you a little bit of Australian Conservatives merchandise. Thanks for writing in. Terry writes, my family and I are thinking of voting for you instead of the Liberals, but it hangs on this. Will you fight to increase aged care funding? Well, Terry, I don't know is the short answer to that. There's been a number of inquiries into aged care and it continues on. Most recently, they had something about elder abuse and some of the problems in the aged care system. I think one thing we can do for it, quite frankly, is to ensure there is a mandatory reporting of complaints and abuse because I think a lot of them have been covered up. But right now, I haven't seen the actual figures. So, Terry, I haven't got an answer for you, mate. Nursing home system. Jeff writes, thanks for your fresh approach to Australian issues and common sense blog updates. Many issues you and the Sky News team raise, and that seems to be an election issues of importance to sensible Australians. But one I was unaware of is the aged care system and costs. He's got extensive expertise in harshness, unfairness, and anomalies of the Centrelink system, which discriminate seriously against people who are married, older, frugal, or have worked hard all their lives. However, the nursing home system is much worse. And he goes on. It's one of those things that most people do not encounter and do not discuss. You know, I'm one of those people, unfortunately. My father is a 95-year-old gold DVA World War II veteran who's never received 1 cent from Centrelink in his life. He'll be paying 5 to 6 times the daily fee that a basic age pension recipient would be paying, or $9,000 a month in his case. This is for the same level of service, room, food, activities, hours of care or attention. It seems incredible. But your researchers will confirm these sorts of facts, and in Sweden, the maximum monthly fee is $140. Please contact me for any further information I can provide. Well, I'm going to say thank you, Jeff. I'm going to ask the aged care minister about that case, because it does seem extraordinarily unfair. You've got a gold card DVA veteran who's paying $9,000 a month because he's never taken the age pension. Seems a bit odd to me. Owen writes, I've joined the Australian Conservatives. Good on you, Owen. I'd like to hear more about the party's position on nuclear power. Do you see a way forward for it in this country without massive government investment? Well, yes, Owen, I do. But firstly, you have to remove the impediment to even considering it. And that is, there is a blanket prohibition on even considering nuclear power in this country. Now, it might not stack up economically. You might not find a community that wants it. You might not, you know, pass the public interest test. There might be an outcry by, you know, normal people rather than just the feral protesters saying they don't want it. And so it might not get through the political barriers. But why can't we have a conversation about it? Why is there a blanket prohibition? Technology has moved on. It's no longer Three Mile Island or Chernobyl. It is cost effective. There are dozens of new nuclear plants being built because they're efficient, they're economical, they're safe, and they're environmentally friendly for all those people who are worried about carbon dioxide emissions. I'm not saying it is the answer, but it's a potential answer. Australia could be a nuclear superpower if, in the energy space, if we wanted to be. We've just got to open our minds to it. I'm technology agnostic. I don't care if you want to use nuclear, coal, gas, wind, solar, whatever, but the government shouldn't be funding it. The government shouldn't be subsidising it, but it should be giving contractual and operational certainty for whatever is coming down the pipe. Climate change. Please advise me your policies regarding climate change and how it relates to power generation. Well, thank you, Graham. Climate change, the climate is changing. It's pretty straightforward. Carbon dioxide is not driving it. It's not been driven by mankind. It's an entirely natural phenomenon. And that's why we had ice ages in the past and we've had hotter periods in the past. I think this climate change, anthropogenic climate change alarmism is completely bogus. And if you follow the trail of money, the people who are most alarmed about it are receiving the most cash to try and solve it. Been on this for ages. Just Google Corey Bernardi climate change. Ron says, I accessed your website moments before beginning this in response to your oft-repeated response to questions on your podcast. His question, what is the scientific proof that the world's emissions cause climate change? Well, I think I've just answered that, actually, but there is none. There is none. It's advocacy research. They get paid money to come up with the conclusions. If they were so confident of the facts, then they wouldn't feel the need to lie about it, and lie they do repeatedly, again and again and again. They make stuff up to satisfy the quest for cash. So I think I'm with you, Ron. Immigration. Can you assure me that you will fight for a very large reduction in immigration and cultural mix? Yes, Robert, I can assure you of that. We're going to halve immigration straight away. We can be more discerning about people we want to come to our country. Graham, UN Refugee Convention. I don't live in your state. I can't vote for you, but I want to help you. In respect of boat arrival refugees from Indonesia and thereabouts, the excuses often used that Indonesia cannot accept these refugees because they're not a signatory to the UN Convention or the UNHCR. with dozens of countries and are not signatories, is it possible for Australia to withdraw from this convention as a signatory? Yes, Graham, it can. I advocate that. I think we should revisit all our conventions, all our treaties. The UNHCR was, the Refugee Convention was signed, I think, in 1956. It was designed for a different time. It wasn't designed to deal with the scammers that we've got now. So get out of it. Paul, when do we expect some things to be done about halal rot? Well, when the Australian Conservatives are in power, I tell you, because the government's doing nada about it. Shameful. For your suggestions box, writes Steve, your message would benefit from showing your funds tank, some simple picture chart that shows the target and current position of your fundraising. Good idea, Steve. I'm going to get on to that. Corey, John writes, I suggest you need to apply some discipline to the length of your podcast. They're growing in length week by week. Some weeks they do, John. They get a bit longer, yeah. The longer your podcast become, the more your busier listeners are going to opt out and simply hit the X button. If your listener base shrinks, you're not getting your message across. My feeling is that 10 minutes is a desirable upper limit. Well, John, I'm sorry. We're still pitching around the 30-minute mark. Some days it's a bit shorter. Some days a bit longer. But why don't you listen to it at 2x speed? If you listen to it at 2x speed, you'll get through it in 15 minutes and it's still understandable. Your weekly dose of common sense is no longer interesting to me, says Peter. Right, you're not exciting, he says. I do not follow podcasts. I can read, so I ignore TV or video. I'm too busy to open pages to find out things that make one go, hmm. I do not think that podcasts are a way to achieve political aims, emails or tweets. Podcasts for people with plenty on their time. Yeah, well, they are, Peter. Thank you. But you can still read the blog. It's just about one click. You can read that. That's cool. You don't have to listen to the podcast. No one does. And can I tell you, it's not about achieving a political aim. It's about engaging people in a modern way. Podcasts are very popular all across the world. You don't have to listen if you don't want to. And we put snippets online as well, so you can just get that. But Jennifer says, I love your podcast, Corey. They're informative and make sense. I'm a member of the Conservatives, the only party that says it as it is. I enjoyed listening to Ian Marcos and frightening to hear about all the government money-making schemes they're trying to put on tradies. Good on you, Jennifer. I liked Ian Marcos and so did Paul Murray. He rang me and told me he thought Ian Marcos was great. Adrian, I don't think the podcasts are too long. This is becoming an eternal debate. People saying it's too long and too short. Anyway. Thank you, Adrian. I could listen to your rationality all day. Well, I could listen, read your emails all day when they're so complimentary. You've become part of my Wednesday evenings. Keep it up. Thanks, Adrian. Alison, and I'm going to finish on this one. Alison writes, Hi, Senator. I've never been interested in politics until you came along. I love your work and ideas. This reminds me of Black Power written on the boxer's shirt that you talked about one week. The Western Australian Police have a program for Aboriginals only. There used to be a cadet program for 16 to 18-year-olds, inclusive of everyone. Now it's 17 to 25-year-old Aboriginals only, so my daughter cannot apply. I don't find that very inclusive at all. I'm sure the Aboriginals wouldn't feel inclusive in the police force after being in a special program. Would they be allowed to run a cadet program for Anglos only? Thanks for listening. Keep up the good work. And this was, she's provided a link to the job advert. Well, this sort of stuff, Alison, is going on all around the country. They're earmarking jobs in the military, in the government, in the police force, all over the place for people they feel are discriminated against. And in turn, they're discriminating against others. One chap told me he can't get into the police force because he's a male and they're looking for female recruits. It's the same in the army. I think it's a terrible step. It's a retrograde step. And it's only fueling this concept of division, of isolation, of identity politics right through society. I'd dump it. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Corey Bernardi.
Enjoying your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi? You need to get on board with the Conservatives. Go to conservatives.org.au and join the party.
That's the weekly dose of common sense for another week. This is Corey Bernardi feeling a little worse for wear, if I can say so, because my voice is giving out. I reckon I've got that dreaded man flu, but it won't stop me being on Paul Murray Live tonight on Sky News. Paul Murray, 2019 Gold Logie winner. That's what I'm looking forward to. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Keep your feedback coming. Corey@coreybernardi.com and keep the common sense flowing in your community.
Do you think you've got what it takes? Donate now and become a part of the conservative revolution at conservatives.org.au.